Dr. Jim Tucker, MD, is a board-certified child psychiatrist and directs research into children's reports of past life memories at the University of Virginia, the Division of Personality Studies. He attended the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he graduated Phi Beta Kappa with a BA degree in psychology in 1982, followed by a medical degree 4 years later. Now, he has now published a number of articles in scientific journals, and he has also spoken before both scientific and general audiences and made several television appearances. Dr. Tucker is the assistant professor of psychiatric medicine at the University of Virginia Health System, and in addition to conducting research, serves as a medical director for the Child and Family Psychiatry Clinic. His book is called Life Before Life, A Scientific Investigation of Children's Memories of Previous Lives. He's our guest on Coast to Coast. First-time guest, by the way. Jim, how are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Good, Jim. Good to have you with us. Is this unusual for a university to have a division of personality studies within it?
It's quite unusual. In fact, it's basically unique that there's a division that spend so much effort looking at these reports of young children of remembering previous lives.
How did this division get established?
Well, as you mentioned, it started over 40 years ago. And at that time, the chairman of the psychiatry department was a man named Ian Stevenson. And he had heard of these reports of young children talking about previous lives, and he collected some from newspapers, books, magazines, that sort of thing, collected them all together and wrote a journal article about 44 of these cases, and mentioned that he thought somebody ought to investigate to see if new cases could be found, although he had no idea that he'd be the one to do it. But once the article was published, he got a call that somebody had heard of a case like that in India, and asked him if he wanted to go investigate. So he did, and he went to India, and he found 25 of the cases. Got similar results in Sri Lanka, where he heard about one, went there, found six or seven, and he realized that this phenomenon was much more common than anyone had any idea that it was. So as he became more and more interested in these cases, he started devoting more and more time to it. Eventually stepped down as chairman of the department so that he could do this research full time. One of the people who read that article he wrote is a man named Chester Carlson, who invented the Xeroxing process, and he began funding the research. And then when Carlson died, he left over $1 million to the university for the work that allowed the division to start, and it's been going ever since.
Was there ever a time when Stevenson was starting the research, probably then years ago, that he doubted the direction that he was going, that he thought maybe this is a figment of these children's imaginations?
Well, I think he's always been open to various possibilities about what the best explanation for these cases might be, and he's certainly written about that. But as he said about this first article, when you looked at individual cases, then there might be various weaknesses or various interpretations. But when you pulled them all together and saw this worldwide phenomenon of young children talking about past lives, so there just had to be something there.
What, Jim, steered you into this direction?
Well, that's a little bit of a long story. I did my training at the University of Virginia. And then when I finished, I stayed in Charlottesville and went into private practice. And it was going quite well, but I was not feeling fulfilled by it.
Okay.
And then when I got remarried, my wife, Chris, was open to a lot of alternative ways of thinking, of seeing psychics and that sort of thing, which got me curious about various paranormal type things, parapsychology. So I just happened to be reading one of Ian Stevenson's books when we saw an article in the local newspaper that his division had gotten a grant to start a new study of near-death experiences. So I called to see if they needed help interviewing patients for the study, and they said they might. So I started going to the research meeting an hour a week. I never did interview patients for that study, but then I started coming in earlier and helping with some of the other studies. Eventually, Ian asked me if I wanted to take a trip to Asia to see some of these kids. Then I came on half-time, and then in 2000, I gave up my practice completely and came out at the university full-time.
Well, this is going to be fascinating talking with you tonight, Jim. Not only, of course, about your book and research, Life Before Life, but some of your beliefs based on your experience, what just might be out there, why these children are doing what they do. When you were investigating and Stevenson was investigating children, what about adults? Is it that maybe as we get older, we forget about this stuff, that we just think maybe we're dreaming things? Why children as opposed to adults?
Well, because the kids are the ones generally who report the memories. These kids usually start at a very early age. The average is 36 months, so they're starting around the age of 3. And most of them, by the age of 6 or 7, seem to have forgotten about it completely. Now, that's the age when they're starting school and sort of getting, you know, totally involved in this life. Mm-hmm. But it's also the age where kids of all types lose early childhood memories, so it would make sense that they would lose these memories too. There are exceptions, and there are occasionally cases where even into adulthood they say that they have some memories, but the vast majority of them forget by the time they're in school.
Based on the scientific investigation of the children's memories of past lives, what conclusion have you drawn about this whole entire phenomenon?
Well, we never draw completely firm conclusions because we're studying this scientifically and we're always open to new data and new possibilities. But in the book, after reviewing the stronger cases that we have, I eventually conclude that the best explanation for the cases is that memories and emotions sometimes can carry over from one life to the next.
Tell me a little bit about your research and how you were able to put this into the book form of Life Before Life.
Well, what we do is very carefully study each case. So young child makes statements. We have agents in various countries looking for these cases for us. When they hear about them, they contact us, and then we go and interview as many people as possible about the case. Often, by the time we get there, the child has made enough statements where somebody's been able to track down the deceased individual whose life they seem to be remembering. So we interview as many witnesses as possible, find out exactly what the child said, particularly before the families met. Then we interview the other family, the family of the deceased individual, and check and try to verify just how accurate the child's statements are for the person who died. Number of these cases, the children have birthmarks. So in that case, we try to get autopsy reports or medical records to see how well they match up with wounds on the body of the previous person.
Do they match up?
Often they do, yes.
Oh, my God.
Ian Stevenson wrote a book that contained 225 cases of birthmarks that matched wounds on the previous person, usually fatal wounds. And some of the birthmarks are quite dramatic.
Okay, fatal wounds. Let's assume somebody in that past life, maybe they were stabbed in the stomach, for example. The child would have some kind of birthmark on the stomach, maybe in that region where the stabbing occurred?
That's right. And again, they're often not just little blemishes like, you know, many of us have. But they can be unusual or unusually large, puckered or unusual shapes, that sort of thing.
Now this has got to be one of the most incredible aspects of the research because it somehow crosses over not only in memory, but also there's a physical tie-in here. How does that occur?
Well, we don't know exactly how it occurs, but our thinking is, or at least my thinking, is that there are other studies that show that mental images can sometimes have very specific results in people. So, for instance, particular people can be hypnotized so that You can tell them you're burning them with something and touch them, and they'll develop a blister and a burn. There are cases where people will relive previous trauma and then develop markings on their skin that match. Like there's this famous case where a guy remembered when he had been tied up and he developed rope marks on his skin. So we know that sometimes mental images can have very specific effects on the body. So in this case, since we think that the consciousness seems to continue past the one life and go on to the next one, it would make sense that in some cases the physical injury was so traumatic that it sort of scarred the consciousness so that it took this mental image with it to the next body and then affected the developing fetus.
That is something, almost as if ghosts take various things with them to that side from the living.
Well, that's right. I don't really think of it in terms of ghosts so much, but as the whatever it is, this piece of the person that continues after the body dies and then enters the next body.
The children who have these past lives, do they remember them as past lives, or do they simply talk about it as if they just know about it and they really don't understand that they indeed might have been somebody else?
Yeah. Well, it can vary. There are some kids, and of course, their language skills may not be fully developed either, but there are some kids who will talk about it very much in the present tense. They'll say to their parents, "You're not my real parents. My real parents live in such and such place."
Oh my.
But there are others who do recognize that it's in the past. They'll say, "I used to be big. I died this way. Now I'm little again." So it sort of varies from case to case.
What seems to be, with the research you've done, the longest time span between a past life and a current life? Does it skew hundreds of years, thousands of years, or just a few?
Well, most of our cases, they are very recent lives. The average is only about 16 months between the death of the previous person and the birth of the child. But there is a lot of variation. Now, you know, if a child talks about living thousands of years ago, obviously it's impossible to verify that. So that does play a role. We've got a couple of well-verified cases from 50 years ago, but most of them are much more recent than that.
Jim, what about children talking about numerous past lives, or do they just talk about one?
Occasionally they will talk about more than one, but the vast majority of them just talk about the one recent one. Well, we've got a fair number who may talk about two. We don't have many that talk about more than that.
Well, how do the parents react when they hear their child talking this way?
Well, that can vary as well. In countries with a belief in reincarnation, where a lot of these cases come from, the parents certainly believe the children, but a lot of times they still don't want to hear about the statements. Sometimes, because in some areas there's a belief that if a child talks about previous lives, then they'll have a shorter life this time. So the parents will try to get them to stop. Other times, frankly, the parents just become very irritated because the children keep saying, "You're not my real parents," and the parents get sick of it. So we've had a number of cases where the parents were fairly brutal in trying to get the children to stop talking. Here, it can really vary. Some of the parents, of course, find it fascinating. Others are fairly appalled by it because it really disagrees with their religious beliefs. But in those cases, at least the ones that we hear about, even though it really upsets them, they take it seriously enough to contact us.
Do some of them think that their child might be ill somehow or possessed?
Well, you know, it's funny. You might think that if they do think that, they don't contact us about it, because I can't remember any case where the parent was concerned that the child was possessed.
Now, give me a procedure when you're contacted, how you're contacted, and what you do once that initial call comes in.
Yeah. Well, it varies. It depends on where the case comes from. If it's one of these in Asia, then again, we have sort of scouts out looking for them. Right. They may hear about them by word of mouth or occasionally read about them in the newspaper or something like that. They contact us with the details. when we have a few, then we can take a trip there and investigate. And again, we usually start with the child's family, get as much history as possible, and then go on from there. Here now, of course, a lot of it is by email. We set up our website a few years ago, and parents will contact us through that. And then often I will have a correspondence with them that will go on for some time, and then when I'm able to, I'll take a trip there and talk with the family.
What's one of the most fascinating cases that you've come across?
Well, there are a lot of them. One American case that I find particularly interesting is this little boy named Sam from Vermont. And he was born 18 months after his paternal grandfather, his father's father, died. And then when Sam was 18 months old, his dad was changing his diaper one day, and the little boy looked up at him and said, "When I was your age, I used to change your diapers." And the parents thought that was quite odd. The mom remembers the father walking out of the boy's bedroom with this very puzzled look on his face, because neither one of them was religious, certainly neither believed in reincarnation. In fact, right. the mom's dad was a Southern Baptist minister. And then as time went on, the boy began talking more about how he used to be the grandpa and how he used to be big, and the mom became quite interested, so she was started asking him some questions to sort of test him a little bit, and he came out with some remarkably interesting details, like talking about the fact that the grandfather's sister had been murdered 60 years before, talking about the fact that the grandfather's wife had made milkshakes for him using a food processor rather than a blender. Little
how
things
old,
like that.
How old was the kid, Jim?
He was three or four.
That's
and,
shocking.
You know, the parents, at least, were quite clear that he had never heard these things. Now, with the same family case like this, you never know that for sure, but they certainly felt like he couldn't have heard these things. So then when he was four, his grandmother died, and she lived hundreds of miles away from the family. So the father went out to help deal with the belongings and so forth.
Sure.
Brought back some pictures, family pictures, and before then they had not had any of his family. So the mom had him out one night on the coffee table looking at him, and the boy walks over, he's four at the time, walks over and starts pointing to pictures of the grandfather and saying, "That's me, that's me." So to test him, the mom took out, there was a class picture of from elementary school of the grandfather that had 20-some kids. It had 16 boys because I counted those. And she said to him, "Show me where you are in here." And he ran his finger along the picture, stopped it at the grandfather, and said, "That's me."
That's a great story. Yeah. Hold on, Jim. We'll be back with you in just a moment. We'll take this quick break. This is an incredible story. The name of this book, of course, is called Life Before Life, a scientific investigation of children's memories of previous lives. This is a subject that is so dear to my heart. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And our guest tonight is Dr. Jim Tucker. His book, Life Before Life, a scientific investigation of children's memories of previous lives. We'll be back with the doctor in just a moment, of course. And we're back with Dr. Jim Tucker. Jim, it seems like just with that case that you were talking about, the little four-year-old boy and his great-grandparent, it sounds like this consciousness or whatever it is out there might have free will to pick and choose the body it wants to come back into. Is that possible? I mean, what are the odds, for example, of the grandfather, the great-grandfather, coming back into the body of his son or his son's son's little kid?
Yeah, well, it certainly doesn't seem to be a random process, that's for sure. I mean, almost all of our cases are ones where the children talk about life in the same country, and a lot of them are the same town or even the same family. Now, how that happens is another question, but it certainly seems that there are factors that cause people to be reborn where they are. Some of the children will talk about choosing their next parents. They'll talk about the time between lives, although most of them don't. But then there are other cases where the children will bitterly complain about being in the families they're in and wanting to be with the other families. So, you know, in those cases, it doesn't seem like they had control over it. So it's hard to know. It's also possible that it's not that they had control, but due to emotional connections or that sort of thing, there's sort of a magnetic pull kind of thing that pulled the consciousness to the particular family.
Do any of them, Jim, talk about where they were or what this field was that they might have been in between the lives?
Yeah, they do. We get varying stories. Some of them, frankly, sound a little fantastic, but some of them will talk about just sort of hanging around where the previous person lived and particularly died. There's one who talked about living up in a tree for 7 years where the body of the previous person had been dumped, and then one day followed his future father home. Others will talk about seeing the funeral and that sort of thing, and events in the previous family's life before sort of moving on. But others will talk about other realms or, you know, sort of heaven, if you will. And of course, those stories are impossible to verify, but certainly there are a lot that will talk about that. And then some will say that sort of they were guided, a guide came and took them to the next family, or others will talk about sort of seeing their future parents and choosing to go with them.
Do they ever talk about God or heaven or anything like that?
Occasionally. I mean, you have to keep this sort of in a cultural context. We don't really hear about God so much in countries that don't have a belief in God.
Okay.
But we do hear about it here. The case that I just told you about, Sam, he talked about being in heaven and being with God, and then God sort of sending him back to be reborn again.
Do they want to come back?
Well, that's a good question. I can't think of any reports where the children said they wanted to stay where they were and they were forced to come back. That they generally seem to view living as a positive process, even if they're not particularly happy where they are.
Are these children particularly good in school and in sports and things like that? Do they excel or are they just average kids?
Well, we've done actually several studies where we did psychological testing with them, and in general, they're quite bright. We did one of American cases where we tested 15 of them at a very early age. The oldest was 6. And they all had IQs that were over 100, that were above average. And there are different ways of looking at that. I mean, one would just be that they sort of, since they have the memories, they sort of come in with a head start as far as developing language and that sort of thing. But the other would be that by being bright, having good language skills, they're more likely to talk about these things at an early age, and then talking about it sort of helps solidify the memory that they're experiencing so that they can talk about it more.
Do any of these children come from a past life that might have been mean-spirited or just plain evil, Jim? Maybe they were murderers in a past life. Do they talk about that? And if that's the case, how do you think they'll end up as adults in this life?
Well, some of them, yes, some of them have very unsavory pasts, and they'll describe being gangsters or bandits or whatever who killed people and were killed themselves. And some of them will express regret about that, and they seem to use the memories that they have as a way to try to become better people. It's hard to say how these kids will end up. I mean, most of them, frankly, they forget about the memories and then go on to lead normal lives like everybody else. As far as how many of the personality characteristics carry over from one life to the next, it's hard to say. It certainly varies in cases. I can't think of one where a murderer then later became
a murderer
in the next life, too, but there may be cases like that.
Have these children ever talked about perhaps being animals in their past life? You know, or insects or anything like that?
Well, occasionally we do get those reports. Now, of course, those are impossible to verify. And, you know, there are ones, frankly, that I don't find all that appealing myself. But occasionally the kids will talk about having had a previous life as a human, but also having had a previous life as an animal.
Because, you know, if you believe in the spirit world or whatever it might be, it's entirely possible that, you know, they might be able to overlap like that.
That's right. Who knows?
What about coming from other planets within this universe, or maybe even parallel universes? Do they ever talk about that?
Well, certainly not parallel universes, because I don't know how a young child would even
know,
be able to describe that. As far as the other planets, I mean, again, most of our cases, they're talking about, you know, being within a couple hundred miles, or often much less. So the vast majority aren't even talking about other countries. Occasionally, I mean, once in a blue moon, we may get a child talking about having been in space or another planet or something, but those are really not reports that we hear very often.
With your research, what does it tell you then of these past lives? Do they seem to be family related? Somehow the structure of the family stays within the evolution boundaries of as they progress?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, but I mean, we've got plenty of cases where they are not in the same family, that's for sure. So, I mean, they're perfect strangers, you know, who are 150 miles away or whatever.
Okay, so they don't necessarily have to know the family. You know, they weren't the gardener of the family, and now
no, not at all. Of course, the strongest cases are ones where they had absolutely no knowledge of the previous person before, and then came out with all these details about him.
I wonder if five children who talk about past lives end up being in families that had these past lives as well. If anybody in that family might have had the same relationship with the past life.
Mm. Well, so in other words, somebody in the current life, they have the similar relationship in the past life.
Yes, yes. Maybe they were married together, or
yeah.
These are in children, of course, but they had some kind of similarities that way.
You do get those reports at times, but usually not. Usually not from these young children. Sometimes adults will have dreams or other experiences where they feel like they have memories of their previous lives. They'll be much more likely to say, you know, in my last life, my boyfriend was my husband or something like that. But the kids don't really do that.
What does this tell you about reincarnation now? What are your personal beliefs?
Well, when you say personal beliefs, that can be taken a couple of different ways. I mean, as I've said, I think the strongest cases do provide evidence that memories and emotions sort of carry over from, or can carry over from one life to the next. As far as is it part of my personal belief system, I'm actually sort of neutral about it. I mean, I certainly like the idea of us surviving death and the consciousness carrying on, but whether it's here or somewhere else, you know, doesn't particularly matter to me.
Okay, but can you conclude, Jim, with your research and with the research done at the university, that it is beyond coincidence that these children are merely guessing or talking about things that are similar with past lives after you have a chance to verify most of it?
Yes, I think we can say with virtual certainty that coincidence is not a reasonable explanation for the strongest cases. I mean, there are kids who have come up with just incredible details that, I mean, there would be no way in the world that could be due to coincidence or to guessing.
Give me another one of your favorite cases.
Well, there's this little girl named Purnima in Sri Lanka, and when she was born, she had birthmarks over the left side of her chest and her lower ribs. And then when she was four, the family was watching TV, and there was a well-known Sri Lankan temple that was shown on TV that was 150 miles away from where they lived. And she saw that and seemed to recognize it and began saying that she had lived on the other side of the river from that temple. And kept talking and eventually made 20 statements about the previous life and described being a man who was an incense maker. She named the two brands that he had made, and these were not brands that were even available locally in her area. She talked about selling this incense, riding on her bike, and that she was killed in an accident when a big vehicle hit her. Her father was a principal, and then a new teacher came to town whose wife's family was from this area where the temple was. So he eventually went with his brother-in-law to the temple, asked about families on the other side of the river from it, and sure enough, they found a family that made those particular two brands of incense. They were the only family that did. And they had one of the owners had been killed in just that way. He'd been on a bike selling when he got hit by a big truck. And the autopsy showed that he had fractured ribs and on the left and abrasions on the skin that matched the girl's birthmarks. When they took her there and she met the family, she seemed to show a good knowledge of incense making. In addition, she would comment, like she'd look at some and say, oh, you changed the wrapper of that particular brand of incense. So she showed a lot of knowledge of the previous family, the previous life.
Are the families of these children particularly religious, or are they just common folks with no general religious background?
It seems to vary. It sort of runs the gamut.
Do the families ever get concerned about the children?
Well, they do. I mean, they have different concerns. Sometimes the family will worry that the previous family is going to try to take the child. And of course,
assuming they're still alive, I guess that could happen then, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of these times the child will describe having been a child who was killed or died.
Okay.
So that, you know, especially if they're describing a life where the family is better off, the current family can worry about that.
Have you ever seen a case, Jim, where in this particular case, then child to child, the family of the previous child, beyond helping you authenticate, okay, who the previous kid was, sees and meets the new child? Does that ever happen?
Yes. I mean, in fact, it usually happens. If the child gives enough details where, you know, people are able to track down the previous family, then usually the two families will meet.
They will meet. Are they astounded then when they talk to the child?
Yeah, because often the child, by all accounts, seems to recognize the people. And I mean, it can be quite touching, actually, the reunion aspect of it. And a lot of times, I mean, depending on the distance, but a lot of times these families will keep up contact and will have visits from time to time so that everybody can stay connected.
You know, that I'm trying to imagine what it's like for a family to lose a little child, which is tragic all by itself. And then they find out several years later that the child may still be around in this reincarnated form. I would guess you couldn't let go. You'd have to want to be part of that other family.
Well, that's right. And I mean, the previous families have different reactions. Some of them are quite suspicious about the whole thing because it's hard to realize that, you know, the previous person, the previous child might still be around. But there are others where, I mean, they're very happy at the prospect. And, you know, maybe that sort of colors how they interpret what the child says. But it certainly, those visits and that sort of thing seem to keep the child connected somewhat with the previous life, because those cases, the child is more likely to keep the memories longer than if there's not any contact between the families.
What do some of your colleagues say about this kind of research? Do they believe this?
Well, it varies. I mean, most of my colleagues don't even know about the research.
They will after this book is in everybody's hands, right?
Well, we hope so, yeah. But it's certainly gotten a positive response at times. With some of Ian Stevenson's books, JAMA, the J Journal of American Medical Association certainly gave it very positive reviews. So there are people who take it seriously.
All right, stay with us. Our guest is Dr. Jim Tucker. We're going to open up the phone lines. I want some of you to perhaps share some of your stories with us about these past lives of children, and I'm sure you've got a question or two. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Jim Tucker. Jim, what advice would you give parents if they think their children might truly be from a past life?
Well, when parents have kids that start making these statements, the first thing to keep in mind is that these statements are not a sign of mental illness. As I mentioned earlier, we've done testing with them. We've also done follow-up on a lot of these cases, and the kids are fine. And as I mentioned, they tend to be quite bright. I think parents need to be open to what the children are saying. They need to be respectful in listening to them, just like they'd be respectful in listening to anything that the children might say. We encourage the parents not to ask too many pointed questions, because if they do, the child is liable to start making up things to try to satisfy the parent, and of course then that confuses the whole situation. It's certainly fine if the child brings up a previous life and is talking about it. It's certainly fine to use open questions like, well, do you remember anything else, or things like that. Or, you know, if the child is describing drowning or dying or whatever in the previous life, then it's certainly fine to say that must have been scary or something like that to try to connect with what the child's saying. We encourage parents to write down any statements that the child makes, because if it's a case that turns out can be verified, then having that record obviously would be quite important.
Do you ever put the child under hypnosis, past life regression?
No. That's not something that we would ever recommend for children. We have concerns about it even in adults, even though a lot of people seem to find some value with it.
If there were 10 children and they all were talking about a past life, generally is there a percent, Jim, that would tell you 60% of them might be truly talking about a past life, or 10% of them might be? Is there some kind of number?
No, because there's never any way to be certain. I mean, there are some cases that are a lot stronger than others. So if a child just makes a few statements where it's impossible to verify, you don't know if he's talking about a previous life or if it's just fantasy or something. So, it doesn't mean that he's not, but just that there's not good evidence that he is.
I would guess that by the time you get the cases, those percents go way up, because I would guess parents are pretty concerned by that point, by the time they call you.
Well, that's right. And of course, like in the other countries, we tend to hear about the good cases, the strong cases, because they're the ones that obviously end up in the newspapers, or the ones where people are talking about them a lot. If a child just makes a few statements that don't lead anywhere, then, we don't tend to hear about them.
Did you hear that story about that kid who believes he was a World War II fighter pilot? And, he talked about his wingman, and the plane was on fire, and he went down, he crashed.
That's James Leininger.
Yes,
I am familiar with that case. It's not one that we've investigated, but I'm certainly familiar with it.
Let's go to some calls here. Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jonathan from Wilma, New York.
Hi, Jonathan.
Two things I'd like to ask Dr. Tucker. Is he familiar with a hypnotherapist by the name of Newman who wrote a book called Journey of Souls?
I'm familiar with it, but I have not read the book.
The reason that I mention it is it's 28 case histories of past life regressions.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to read it, because there's a lot of correlations between his findings and your findings.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd recommend anybody who reads your book might want to read this also. The other reason I called is I'm a step-grandfather as well as a stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
And my middle daughter's youngest son, who's now 2 years old, I met him when he was one. And the moment I saw this kid, I said, I know this kid.
Mm.
And he looked at me, and he had very familiar mannerisms. And my father died 5 or 6 years ago. And I've watched this kid for the last year, and he has my father's facial expressions. He has my father's personality. He has everything.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
This is like my father. Now, being that my whole family, the odd thing is this is a step-grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But my whole family, my dad's oldest sister was a medium. My younger brother hears voices all the time, has to put them out of his head. He's not nuts. He's just very, psychic
mm-hmm.
in that respect.
Very tuned in, huh?
Very intuitive. But my whole family, both paternal and maternal sides, have a history going back generations of this
mm-hmm.
type of thing. I grew up in a haunted house. I've tried to call George a few times to tell him about the situation I grew up in, because we had a couple poltergeists, three specters in our house back in Albany. I mean, people wouldn't believe the things we grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to keep in touch with you. I just pulled your site off and let you know how this child progresses, because I tell you, dollars to donuts, I'm living with my father.
Yeah. Well,
he's 2 years old.
What, Jim, could you recommend that Jonathan here do in order to monitor this situation?
Well, it's an interesting situation, because since it's a step situation, you know that any similarities with his father are not due to genetics.
Right.
There's certainly no reason to think that the consciousness would be bound by genetics or family, so whether it's a stepchild or a biological, you know, wouldn't make any difference to a consciousness.
I have another question for you when you get done.
As far as advice, I would just keep your ears open and I wouldn't necessarily try to ask the child about previous life, but just see what he comes up with and see if there are things that he knows that it doesn't seem like anyone has told him.
Well, this is what I was planning on doing, and something that you had mentioned that Newman had found in these 28 case histories was that you choose your life. You choose the circumstances of your life. You choose your parents. You choose the family. And what he found in these 28 case histories was that it could be a millisecond in between lives. It could be 1,000 years in between lives.
Mm-hmm.
And what all the fascinating part of his book, where I saw some correlations in what you said, was he mentions a soul family, not just soulmates, but a soul family that you are part of. And all 28 of his patients came up with this. And there's one other hypnotherapist whose name eludes me, who did a similar study and got exactly the same results from other people. This mentioning of a soul family, a choosing of life.
That might be Bruce Goldberg.
Excuse me?
That could be Bruce Goldberg, Dr.
That name
Bruce
rings
Goldberg.
A bell.
Yeah, could be.
And you were mentioning where people may have had a sordid past.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of there being lessons to be learned in this life, and if you learn them, you go up a step on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you stay at that same step and have to come back and repeat it again until you get it right. All 28 of his patients had this same remembrance. And that's what they said happened when they went back to their soul family. There was a guide in their soul family, which took them to their advisors in their soul family. They had to make an accounting to their soul family of what they had done in this life, mm-hmm. this most recent life. And then had to return. So you're finding things scientifically that he is finding in his work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a firm believer in reincarnation, because I'm 49, and my entire life since I was 3-4 years old have known things that I had no business knowing.
Mm-hmm.
People have asked me questions. I've come out with an answer and then sat there and said, how the heck did I know that? Mm-hmm. I never read it. I never saw it. Nobody ever relayed that information to me. I just know things that I have no business knowing. I have no recollection of ever learning, hearing, seeing, reading, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So well, being a firm, excuse me.
As far as the soul family part goes, you know, we with our kids, we just sort of have a small piece of this that we're able to look at, and certainly some of them do talk about having guides and choosing the next life and that sort of thing. But the first admit there is a lot of this that we just don't know about, but, you know, that we're trying to find out.
Can people email you, Jim, through your website?
Yes, they certainly can. But we encourage them to if they have children who are making these reports.
Okay, yeah, this sounds like a case that you're going to be monitoring for some time.
Yeah, exactly.
If reincarnation is real, and let's assume for a moment that it is, based on your research and others, if it's real, does that mean, can we conclude that all of us have reincarnated at some point in this vast universe?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, the thing that we don't know is it unusual for a child to have memories of a previous life, which obviously it is, but is it just the memories that are unusual, or is it that coming back is unusual? And there's not any way from our cases to really tease that out. I mean, it's certainly possible that there are particular issues that sort of keep the consciousness connected to this plane and this life. Because, for instance, a lot of these kids describe dying a violent death. About 70% of the cases, the deaths are from unnatural means. So it may be that a factor like that causes the consciousness to sort of be stuck here and to have to come back. But it's possible that the rest of us, you know, would normally go on to heaven or hell or who knows what. On the other hand, as you say, it's a vast universe, and there are a lot of previous lives, and it's certainly possible that all of us would have repeated lives, and that it's just because of the violent death or something like that that sort of short-circuits the process that these children have the memories, even though the rest of us don't, as we're moving from life to life.
I wonder what it's like in this vast pool up there of consciousness, how this works, what the whole system is, for the process for coming into another body, into another soul. I mean, it's absolutely staggering just trying to figure out how it all happens.
Well, that's right, and I certainly wish that we knew more about the process. I mean, we've mainly sort of focused on just trying to verify what these cases even mean, you know, rather than sort of looking beyond and trying to figure out the details of how the process worked. I can say that the cases don't offer much evidence for the idea of karma, you know, being their actions in one's life then affect their circumstances in the next life. We have been able to look at that a little bit. We've got a lot of our cases in computer database, and we can run correlations. So I've looked at personal characteristics of the previous personality, good and bad, being criminals or, you know, being particularly generous and that sort of thing. And they don't show much correlation with the circumstances that the child seems to be born in. At the same time, I've also talked about these birthmark cases, and the children always describe being the victim of an attack or whatever.
Something tragic.
Birthmark. They're never talking about being the perpetrator, and then they get the birthmark or birth defect as a punishment for it.
What is the farthest back case that you have either studied, researched, or have been told about?
Well, as far as ones that have been verified, 50 years is about it. I've got one in my book that goes back that far. Also, the Leininger case that you mentioned where the child remembered being a World War II pilot, that was about 50 years. I mean, occasionally we'll get reports where, you know, they're talking about hundreds of years ago, but those are impossible to verify that there actually was a deceased person who's you know, life they're remembering. So they just remain unverified cases.
Well, they seem to recycle then pretty fast in terms of coming back. They don't wait around too long, do they?
That's right. Certainly the children who have the memories. Now, again, that may not apply to the rest of us. But, again, the average length between the death of the previous person and the birth of the child is only 15 or 16 months. So that they're generally describing very recent lives.
As you said last hour, you can't really verify this, but in all seriousness, have they ever said that they once lived on Mars, for example?
Again, we get virtually no reports along those lines. But again, it seems that the lives that children are able to remember are ones that are close in time and often close in geography. So it might just be that, you know, if somebody had a life on who knows where else in the universe, that those memories just wouldn't carry with them.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the program, and where might you be calling from?
Hi, this is Jim, calling from Sherman Oaks.
Hey, Jim. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi. I have a lot of personal experience with recalling things like this. I at first thought that there was something to past lives because of a series of books called We Were There. It was like We Were There at Pearl Harbor and things like that. And I thought, you know what, I could have been there. But I was very fascinated with all these with these time periods for some reason. And it wasn't that I was just exposed to things, and you know, my family was interested in certain things. It was just me. And so over time, I guess I've become, familiar with some of the things that I've experienced in the past, going back, I guess, more than a couple of hundred years. But specifically, there was one character that was actually not familiar to me. I was never exposed to that person because they were foreign. It was only recently. But I'd been working on a patent. And the material that I've been working on had a lot to do with this person's research. So I'd come in contact with it and was actually kind of experienced a lot of revulsion because I didn't like what that person was doing. But over time, I mean, after about 10 years of it, I basically, through talking to some other people and exposing myself a little bit more, I actually found out that, you know what, it was actually me. So that's my story.
That's pretty good. Do you think that there could be Albert Einstein now reincarnated, Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, people who were great inventors, maybe great musicians, have come back again somehow?
Well, it's certainly possible, of course. We do occasionally have people who claim to have been famous people, but those cases is always difficult to sort out because so much of the information is available to someone. So particularly if it's an adult, it's hard to know if the information they have is just something that they had read somewhere. But getting back to Jim's comment, you know, certainly a lot of people have particular interest in historical periods that are, as he said, no one else in the family had. It's just particular things that really connected with him. And you know, if somebody doesn't have specific memories, then there's no way to say with any certainty whether it's connected with a past life or not. But it is sort of interesting behavior that you could certainly wonder about.
Well, I've got to tell you, this is one fascinating series of subject matter. The funding you said is $1 million. Is that every year, or is that a one-time thing?
Was a one-time bequest, and we have gotten some other requests as well. We're frankly always looking for more funding to try to carry on the work.
This is the kind of research that you don't, and I say this in all seriousness, you don't want it to die. You want research like this to live forever.
Well, that's right, and there's certainly a lot more that we need to learn.
Stay with us. Our guest, Dr. Jim Tucker. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back with more of your questions. You've jammed our phone lines, so we'll take more of your calls next hour as well. We'll be back. Let's now go to Dr. Jim Tucker and continue with your phone calls, and then we'll do it again next hour as well. We are living, Jim, through some very, very strange, tense times, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
These souls, as we call them, that seem to transfer to other bodies, is that what we're dealing with? Is it a transfer of a soul, or is it just memory? What might it be?
Well, it's hard to say, of course, but it's more than just memory. I mean, for one thing, there are a lot of emotions that come with it, so it's more of a more complete personality than just the memories. But in addition, I mean, if you look at the birthmark cases that we talked about earlier, there seems to be something that carries that trauma with it to the next life. So there seems to be some vehicle, whether you call it a soul or a consciousness, as I do in the book, but something that does carry over from one life to the next one.
Let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good evening. My name is Jim, and currently I'm in Portland, Oregon. I drive a truck for a living. That's why I'm currently here.
Good. Good to have you with us, Jim. Go ahead.
Okay. I've got a rather interesting story for the doctor. He's talking about memories and being able to verify them. I have memory, dreams, whatever you want to call it, of a past life and having been in what is now central northeastern Mississippi. The way this thing was verified to me was quite by accident. I was talking to a young man who had to take some leave. He had worked for me when I was in the service years ago, and he had gone to the family's land that they had owned because his great uncle had passed away, and he had moved. He had gone down there to help, get rid of the estate and sell it off and whatnot. And when he came back and started talking to me about it, he mentioned a painting, and as soon as he did, the memory from the dreams came back to me, and I asked him about, is this still there? And yes, it was. And is the piano still in this position? And yes, it was. And he kind of got to looking at me rather oddly, and he says, well, how did you know about this? And I said, well, tell me one more thing. I said, is there still scorch marks on the south wall? And did they ever replace the curtains? And he said, no. How did you know about that? I said, well, there's a house just down the hill from the main house that was where I lived. And he said, well, it's no longer there. It burned down. I said, yeah, I know it burned down. I was living in the house when it burned down. Thing about it is that as part of that life, I had a wife and children, and one of the young girls, I had lost her due to a bridge collapse and the time frame was early 30s, late 20s, and from what he said, the bridge is still not repaired. It's still over the chasm and is still in disrepair. The young girl, when she passed away, when she died from the accident, I remember laying in the river holding her as blood ran out of her ears and nose and pleading with God to please not take her from me and begging him that if he ever did give her back, that I would take care of her. And in this lifetime, I met this woman, this young girl again, and we met and fell in love, and it was rather a strange thing for me to have to tell her that we had been together before and that she had been my daughter.
What did she say?
we were sitting one night, and I told her, I said, I have got something that I need to share with you. And I told her the story of how she had been my daughter and told her all about having driven into town to get supplies and driving back out to the house. The extra supplies in the back of the truck was enough extra weight that the bridge collapsed. And she says, well, that explains, number one, why I'm terrified of heights. She could not even step up on a chair to change a light bulb. She was that terrified of heights. But then she told me, she says, you know, there has always been some connection between you and I. She says, I never knew what it was until just now. And she says, now everything makes sense.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to continue with your story.
I'm pausing to wipe my eyes. I lost her to cancer. About 6 months after we got back together. And again, well, this time I knew that you know, she wasn't going to be hurting anymore. And so I kind of made my peace with God and told him that, you know, I knew why she was going, and please watch over her until I got there. But it just strikes me as odd that everything that there was, it was all confirmed by somebody that wasn't even family. I was born in San Diego, and this was in Mississippi area.
Sounds like you got your second choice, though, huh?
Second chance anyway.
Well, I don't know about chance, but choice. That's good. Does it happen that often, Jim, where someone gets choices like that?
Well, it's hard to say, but that's certainly a remarkable story. And Jim, if you get a chance sometime, I'd love for you to write it up and send it to me in an email, because it does sound like not only is there the emotional piece of it, but there are also a lot of verified and verifiable memories that would be worth checking out.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go to our international line now. You're on Coast to Coast with Dr. Jim Tucker. Hi there.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Bodo. I'm calling from Burlington, Ontario.
Bodo, go ahead.
And I was rather interested in whether you'd heard from children about the incarnation process itself, whether they were able to describe going from one level of consciousness, perhaps the astral, into their present lives, because this is something that I have in my own past, and I was wondering whether you'd heard descriptions along this line.
Well, a little bit. Again, we're talking about 3, 4, or 5-year-olds, so it's hard for them to, I mean, it's hard for any of us, I guess, to put some of this into words, but it's certainly hard for them. I am thinking of a case in particular where the boy did talk about there being different levels of heaven and sort of, you know, moved his hand up in different levels and talked about going up them and then coming back down.
Did he speak about being in a place where there were points of light and that he would be either an astral being or, say, a being of light?
No, when the kids talk about the time between lives, it tends to be more concrete than that. And, of course, maybe it depends on the level or whatever that they're remembering. But no, this boy in particular talked about, he did talk about seeing God in heaven, also talked about seeing animals there.
I see.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. How many souls or individual forms of the consciousness are available for all the people that are born all the time?
Well, who knows? You know, some people have said that with the population explosion that would sort of rule out reincarnation, but it doesn't. And there are a couple of ways where it doesn't. I mean, one is the fact that it may be, as we talked about earlier, that reincarnation is not universal, so there may be some people reincarnating, whereas there are other people who aren't. So, you know, the fact that the population kept growing wouldn't really affect that. There may also be sort of new souls or consciousnesses that are being incarnated for the first time. But even if those aren't the case, there's a guy at Johns Hopkins who ran the numbers and found that the estimates are that there have been 105 billion people who have lived on Earth. And since population is predicted to max out at 10 billion, then there are, you know, certainly enough souls to go around to cover all the people that we have now that with having had past lives before. It would mean that the average time between lives would be decreasing as you're getting more and more people, but there's certainly enough souls from the past to cover the people now.
I would be shocked if we didn't have reincarnation for almost everyone in some form or fashion. We can't prove it, but even in the ancient days, they talked of reincarnation. How did they know, Jim? How were they aware that there was a strong possibility that these souls or consciousness comes back?
Well, who knows? I mean, I think certainly some of it could have been because of cases like these, of children or occasionally adults making these reports. It's even possible that there's some sort of genetic predisposition, because certainly we see these reports more in some populations than others. And if that's the case, if, for instance, in Asia there's more of a genetic predisposition, then it would mean that there were more reports of these children going back a long ways, and that this their reports could have then led reincarnation to become part of the religious beliefs there, rather than the reverse of people thinking it's just the religious beliefs that create the cases.
Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello there.
Yeah, go ahead.
My name is Leona, and I'm from Marion, Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And I've got kind of a new twist on this.
All right, go ahead, share it with us.
I was very close to my father growing up. I was the oldest child, and there were three of us girls and then a boy, and of course I was his boy whenever we were with him. And I guess when he was dying of brain cancer, I was married, living in Marion, and I left home to go down and be with him over the weekend, and was in his room that night along with several other relatives when he passed away. When he took his last gasp, I felt or saw sort of a white streak of lightning from him to me, just almost like it hit me just like that. The oddest feeling that I've ever felt in my life. Well, after the funeral and everything, and when I came back to Marion, my husband and I had intercourse, and the first time in probably 5 years he had touched me, and I became pregnant with a son. And I've always felt, from some of the characteristics my son has and et cetera, that he's a reincarnation of my father.
So what do we need to do to verify this, Jim?
Well, if the child doesn't make specific statements that indicate memories, then, you know, it's really not possible to verify it. But that doesn't mean that it's not very meaningful.
Could these just be hunches on Leona's part?
Well, they certainly could be. Again, without specific memories, you can't say for sure. But I wouldn't discount it. I mean, there are things that happen that people place great emotional importance on, and I think you have to respect that
sure.
Sometimes things may not fall into scientifically verifiable areas, but that doesn't mean that it's not true.
Leona, what other things are there that make you think this?
Well, number one, my son is extremely good with his hands. My father was too, mechanically, woodwork, anything. And my son builds his own furniture, fixes everything. He can do anything. Let's put it that way. He's extremely staunch family man, takes care of his family. That comes first. My father was the same way, exactly. My father was loved boats and the water. My son has got a boat and, of course, the water ski instead of fishing, but he loves the water, the outdoors, camping. So did my dad. When my son was a young boy, we lived on a farm east of Marion, and he trapped, when he was like 8 or 9, 10 years old, trapped muskrats. My father trapped them when he was a child. There are just a lot of little things.
All right. Can this, Jim, very quickly, can this be genetic, or is this just strange coincidence?
Well, I think it could be either or both.
All right. Stay with us. Thanks from the Fast Blasters, the movie I was talking about that had the Hall of Record, the Hall of Souls, the Guff. It's called Seventh Sign with Demi Moore. And that had to do with, you know, how the Guff was emptying out of souls, and that once it did, there'd be some biblical proportion problems, almost like what we're having right now. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Jim Tucker. Your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Jim Tucker. Jim, have you ever had any stories where children later on in their life talk about what life might have been like in the womb of their mother? Do they remember this? Do they talk about hearing things or anything strange like that?
We have had some that did. Most don't, but we have had some that did. And some will talk about what the experience is like in the womb. Others will talk about events that happened in the parents' lives and say that they saw them. Had one case where the mother was pregnant when she and the father got married, and she was noticeably pregnant, so she didn't have any pictures of her wedding up. But she was going through some old stuff one day and pulled out a picture and showed it to her son, and she said, "Do you know what this is?" And he said, "Sure, it's your wedding. I was there. I saw the whole thing." And she said, "You did?" And he said, "Yeah, you walked up some stairs, and then you gave each other rings, and then you ate some cake." And in fact, they got married like in a gazebo and had walked up a lot of stairs to get there, but there was no way to tell that from the picture.
Let's take a few minutes, Jim. Where can people get the book? It's a great series of research articles. Where can they find it?
Well, the book, again, is Life Before Life, and it should be available in all the bookstores as well as Amazon.com and that sort of thing.
St. Martin's Press is the publisher.
Yes, St. Martin's Press, and it is. I've written it for the general public. It has a lot of case reports in it of a lot of these interesting cases, and I also try to pull this together and see what we can take from it.
Have you ever been on one of these cases where it was just truly emotional? And can you share any of those with us?
Well, there are certainly a lot of emotions that come up in these cases. And the case of Sam that I mentioned earlier, where he remembered being his father's father, the father talked about the fact that when he was an adult, he was able to share things with his father, but his father was not able to communicate back with him. And his sense is that if his father has, in fact, been reborn as his son, that the son came back in order to be able to communicate with him and share that connection that he really was not able to do at the end of his life.
Do they act differently toward, let's say, the child? If they truly believe, for example, it's their reincarnated father or grandfather, do they act as if the kid's the kid, or do they act as if the child is the grandfather or father?
Yeah, you know, I've talked with parents about that, and they say that they see the child as the child, even though they also believe that it's a part of their parent or grandparent that came back, but that they are able to just see the child for who they are.
You're talking
about emotional cases, and another one that comes to mind is a little boy in Michigan who was actually born with three birthmarks that matched defects in his half-brother who had died of cancer when he was only two. And with those birthmarks, you know, the mom felt that there was a connection with the previous boy from the start, and then this boy did start talking about the previous life, and that was obviously very emotional for the mom, and it's clear that she and this boy have a very tight connection that presumably is at least partly due to the grief that she felt when her older son died.
Must the past life have been completely terminated? Or is it possible that it evolves when both are still alive?
Well, we do have some cases of what Ian Stevenson calls anomalous dates cases, where we don't have many, but we have some where the previous person died after the child was born. In almost all of those, the child became very sick and probably near death, and then after recovering seemed to have these memories. So that would suggest perhaps that during that illness that it was sort of an opportunity for a soul or consciousness or whatever to come in and sort of take over.
Well, that's, I guess maybe the other one died, but instantly the other one did come, and the body didn't die. Something like that.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's an even murkier area than the rest of it to try to figure out exactly what could happen to explain that.
Let's go back to the phones if we can. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George and Doctor. I have a question. My wife is an astrologer and metaphysician, and we had this, you know, back-and-back thing about reincarnation. But I used to tell her, because I used to feel this about myself a lot, that I was not reincarnated, and I don't even know if this was a word, but I thought I was deincarnated, because I used to feel that things that would happen in our time, I felt like it was like no kidding. In other words, like I felt like I was more from the future than I was from the past. And I would see things that would happen. Sometimes I would say, hey, I could have invented that, or I could have said that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you've heard before where people, they just say to themselves, you know, like, this is like, I didn't come from the past. I came from the future and came back here. I mean, is it something that we have in ourselves sometimes where we just talk about certain things that we know, like when things happen, we say to ourselves, well, I knew that was going to happen, and that we knew it was going to happen because we didn't come from the past, we came from the future. So instead of being reincarnated, we're deincarnated.
Does anybody talk that way? Well, no, you know, it sounds weird, but that's a possibility. Has anybody ever talked about coming from the future? I know it's difficult to verify that, but I'm curious.
Well, yeah, that I guess would be impossible to verify, but it's not something people talk a lot about. But, of course, people do talk about deja vu, where they have a sense that they've experienced something before or experienced a place before, and it's usually where they can't quite get a handle on it until once it's happened, and then they think, oh, I remember that conversation. I had it before. How to explain that is open to suggestion, really. I haven't heard many people put it in the terms of coming back from the future, but, you know, maybe that's worth thinking about.
Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with Dr. Jim Tucker. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
I listened to your show for years. You and I are both, and it's a great show.
Well, thank
First you. Time caller, I've always kind of just enjoyed the topics. But my question is, it goes back to your discussion right before this previous caller, as far as a person passing away, and then, I don't know if you want to call it reincarnating or whatever. I mean, but I've always, my grandfather passed away when I was a year and a half or 2 years old. And now, today, I'll hear stories of him. I was way too young to remember him passing away. But I'll hear stories now, and they're more of a, somebody's resetting a memory to me almost.
As if you were there?
Well, yeah. Have you ever woke up, and this is a really bad analogy, but you were out drinking, you know, 18, 20 hours later, somebody says, hey, you did this, and you're like, oh, my gosh, I did do that. And it's the same way with me. I'll hear these stories from my mom or from, you know, other relatives of my grandpa, and I'll be like, wow, it's almost like an enlightening. Not like, oh, that's a really neat story, but more like that's, oh, geez, I know that. I should have known that. And it's almost like you're, not a deja vu, almost like a reverse deja vu, if you will. I mean,
well, but do you think you were him?
Yeah. The older I get, I'm 37 now, and he passed away, what, 35 years ago, something like that.
Okay, and so you would have already been around for a couple of years before this happened.
Yes, and there are stories. I mean, you know, moms always make up stories. Oh, you were grandpa's little boy. So, I mean, I'm sure he had five daughters. I'm sure I've got four cousins, and we're told the same story.
Does anybody in your family think that you might be him?
My grandma kind of, before she passed away, she never really said so, but it was little instances like we would be over at her house, and one thing I remember, we were sitting down at the kitchen table, all the kids, and grandma's making a snack for everybody, and she comes out with ice cream. And this is a really stupid analogy, but I've never liked ice cream. I always liked sherbet for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I couldn't have been, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old. And my grandma brought everybody ice cream. She's like, we're having ice cream. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is great ice cream. And all of a sudden, she brings out a bowl of orange sherbet. She's like, here's some orange sherbet. And I was like, why am I getting orange sherbet? She's like, well, your grandpa never liked ice cream. It's just odd things. And as I got older, she would always buy, at Christmas time, she would buy presents for all the grandkids.
Right.
You know, $15, $20, whatever, for each kid.
Yeah.
And as she got older, she was really sick, and she couldn't go shopping that year. So she had all these envelopes on the Christmas tree, and she passed them out to all the kids, and they had, like, $20 gift certificates to them. And I remember thinking, oh, great, this is going to stink. Money for Christmas. Who wants money for a Christmas present? Well, I opened up mine, and there's a note in there that says, please stay and help me clean up. And I'm like, okay, fine, whatever.
That's weird, yeah.
Right. So after I stayed, everybody left, and you figure she probably had 20, 25 grandkids, whatever it is. And after everybody left, I'm helping her clean up, and I was getting ready to go. I was like, all right, Grandma, I got to go. You know, I was like 18, 19 years old. I was home on leave from the Navy. You're anxious to get out. You know, you're not really appreciating your grandma at that age.
You love your grandmother, but you don't want to spend the whole day there, right?
Exactly. So I get ready to leave. She's like, well, come here. She'd gone out and bought one present that year, and it was for me. It was a stupid sweater. I mean, looking back, you know, you really appreciate it. But at the time, you're like, oh, great, a sweater. And I said, well, why did you get me a present? She's like, well, your grandpa used to give money back to people when they would give it to him for a present. And she's like, I figured you were the same way. And it's just these little things like that. It's never spoken. In fact, I'm on my cell phone in the garage now, so my wife can't hear me because I've never – Seriously, I mean, you never speak to people about it because you almost think you're a half of, you know, half of a whack job.
You have never shared this story with your wife?
The little bits and pieces, but never the actual realization that what I think is going on.
You do know she listens to Coast to Coast on a regular basis.
We have a 3-year-old. She's in bed.
Are you sure? You being a first-time caller, she's probably saying, this guy sounds just like my husband.
She might be. I don't know. I'll go ask her if she knows who Art and George are later.
I am curious, though, to see why your grandmother was pretty convinced, because it sounds like she was,
that you
were her husband.
I do not know that. And, I mean, there's obviously family resemblances, and there's, I don't know if you want to call it inherited traits. You know, your grandpa walked this way, your dad walked that way, you're going to do that too. But it's always been a little bit more than that. It's more than your dad would open the door with his right hand, you'd do that same thing. But it was more of like just you've always known. But it's, and trust me, I'm a long-time listener, and I've heard a lot of things on this show that are really entertaining, but I'm kind of like, wow, that's got to be kind of out there. But this is one of those things that when I heard the guest on tonight, I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah, you know, I've got to talk to this guy.
All right.
It's just intriguing.
Let's get the take of you, Dr. Jim Tucker, on this particular circumstance.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One is that there are a lot of cases where the memories seem quite sort of murky for the people, and the kids, there'll only be certain times where they can remember them, and they can be kind of vague, and then something in the environment will happen and stimulate the memory. And that sounds similar to what it is here, where, you know, he never really had full concrete memories, but things will happen and it'll sort of register with him as if it was a memory. The other thing is the fact that he's never told his wife, and we get a lot of American cases like this where the families have not told anyone.
Well, the thing is, you don't want to sound, I hate to say it on this radio program because I really enjoy it, you sound like a whack job. Just tell somebody, hey, I think I've been reincarnated from whatever, especially when he was alive when I was born.
Yeah, and do you know if you had any significant illnesses when you were a couple of years old?
significant illnesses back then. I mean,
at
just
two.
Growing up, my biggest remembrance of any kind of illness when I was a kid was just, I always had like gray teeth. My mom's like, oh, you're always sick when the kid, we gave you tetracycline all the time, because back then you gave that to little kids, and come to find out, turn their teeth green, grain. But I mean,
you weren't like dying at two or anything like that.
No. You know, pneumonia, kid stuff, whatever. I mean, crap.
Well, of course, pneumonia would be pretty serious. But.
Back in the late 60s, I mean, you could have had asthma, and they don't diagnose like you did today, like, oh, he's got pneumonia, or he's got a cold. Yeah.
All right, Jim, without him being sickly, is it possible that the grandfather's consciousness, the soul, whatever, could have taken over when he was 2 years old? Have you ever heard that?
I personally can't think of a case like that, but that, of course, doesn't mean that it doesn't happen.
Huh, that is something. Okay, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Let's go to our wild card line. We'll grab a call here before the break. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing, Dr. Jim? This is John. I'm calling from Austin, Texas, and I was wondering if someone doesn't have the past experience of something happening as a child, later on in life you have quite a number of deja vu experiences. Could that be tied into this situation?
Well, it could be, but those usually, there's not really anything to verify. I mean, in most cases where the people have a sense that they've been somewhere before or experienced something before, but it's not really tangible enough for somebody like me to really investigate it.
And it's not really a past life.
No, some people, when they talk about deja vu, mean they go to a new place and it seems like they've been there before. So, you know, then you can kind of wonder.
Well, you know, the marvel of all of this, of course, to me, if one believes in reincarnation, is where these souls are. That's what I'll call them, before they enter the new body. What's out there?
That's a very good question. And again, even though reincarnation is a concept that's foreign to a lot of people here, it doesn't necessarily conflict with Christian ideas of heaven or, you know, other ideas. I mean, what's out there between lives is something that we don't really know anything about.
Has anybody ever talked about being in hell and then they get out of there?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I guess the memories of heaven maybe are a lot more pleasant.
I would think so. Stay with us. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with our guest, Dr. Jim Tucker. We'll get a final update from Richard C. Hoagland on the happenings of the remnants of Hurricane Katrina, as well as Richard's been monitoring that situation for us, and he will all week long. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the water pouring from Lake Pontchartrain into New Orleans has stopped, because the lake's water level is equal to that of the water level in the city, according to a chief engineer. And Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor and EnterpriseMission.com head, this is finally the only good news I've heard about this entire situation.
Yeah, I've actually seen the helicopter shot showing that. It looks like almost a still, beautiful lake, and it's eerie, because you can see all those houses up to their eaves in water, and there's not a riffle of wind, and it's like a mirror. But the canal and the lake and New Orleans are equal.
If they can stop the breaches now and they start doing whatever they do to build up these levees, how long do you think it'll take to clean up the water out there? This is going to go on for months, isn't it?
This is months, and as I said last night, maybe a year, because they confirmed tonight when the head of the Army Corps of Engineers was being interviewed by Larry King, he said that the pumps alone are not going to do it. On any reasonable time frame, and I think your guest in the first hour also said that. What they're planning to do when the water level in the lake goes down another foot or two is to actually punch holes in some of the other levees. And it's kind of like having a bunch of ice cube trays where you have the little separations.
Yes.
And you would tip the tray, and if you're thinking of gravity, and not all of New Orleans is at the same level, you want the water to flow to the lowest level, which, of course, it's going to do. And at some point, the lake becomes the lowest level, So if you're very deft in breaking the levees and then rebuilding them, you can let gravity drain the water, a lot of it, back out of New Orleans before you have to pump out the rest. At least that's the theory that I heard.
Oh, I hope they know what they're doing.
I don't think they do because these levees are berms, and what happens with berms is if you get water on the wrong side, the water gets inside, it becomes tapioca pudding, or think of sugar melting in the rain.
Absolutely.
This is a nightmare. It should have been handled decades ago. This was a disaster waiting to happen, and, you know, it just is a tragedy that it has happened. I wanted to end tonight on an interesting note because we have a lot of people out there. We talked about communications who are trying to find loved ones, neighbors, friends, whatever. The radios and the CB and the cell phones are not doing it, but the internet may. So if they want to scribble down this internet address, NOLA.com, NOLA.com, they have missing persons forums, lost and found forums. They have specific forums for each parish, like the French Quarter, the Bywater neighborhoods, et cetera. You go there, and there are people able to, in this incredible crisis, reach the internet and let people know they're alive and they're okay. And that's the best we can do tonight, George. And hopefully tomorrow night we'll have better news.
Okay. Give us some fuel updates tomorrow, too, as well. Okay, Richard?
Will do.
Richard C. Hoagland, monitoring that situation, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. We'll be back. We'll take the rest of your phone calls with our special guest tonight, Dr. Jim Tucker, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Jim, what's the future hold for you? You've got this book out. You've got some of the research. You're going to continue doing what you're doing. What's next on your plate?
Well, I've been trying to focus more on American cases, and that's partly because even though we've studied over 2,500 of them, since most of them are in Asia, it's easy for people to ignore the research if they want to and just sort of blame it on being a foreign phenomenon of it due to the cultures there. And I'm hoping, frankly, with the book that more Americans will learn about our work and contact us so we're able to get more good American cases. I think if we're able to collect a series of American cases that are as strong as the best Asian ones, then people will need to seriously consider this work.
Why does it seem to be coming more from Asia and other countries?
Well, it's hard to know if the cases occur more there or if we just learn about them more. I mean, when I was in Thailand, we would hit pockets where literally we couldn't ask for directions without hearing about another case. And, you know, here you can't walk into 7-Eleven and ask if people know about children who were talking about previous lives. It's sort of like one of the callers you had where he hadn't even told his wife about it. We've got plenty of families who have never told a soul about it, including grandparents or that sort of thing. Then if they find us, you know, on the internet, then they contact us because, of course, we keep it confidential. But these are things that happen in families that a lot of people tend not to talk about here.
Next up, let's go to the phones again. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. I'm Bill from Washington.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Jim. It's great to be on the air with you folks tonight. I want to thank you for taking my call. I've listened to you for many years. I've never gotten through before. However, I must say I am comforted listening to all of the things that come from your great show. I've felt over the years that I was nuts sometimes with some of the things that have happened to me, and it's just really nice to know that you and the people there at AM Coast to Coast are keeping this alive.
Absolutely. And you know what? You're not nuts because a lot of people have probably experienced the same things you have.
Well, my story is about myself, my grandmother, and my own daughter. I was born really sick. I wasn't expected to live. My grandmother refused to give up on me, and through her efforts, her love, I survived. I've had at least 21 life-threatening accidents or illnesses in the first 21 years of my life. And through all of that, my grandmother was there. And she always helped me to understand what was going on. And like you were just saying about people not talking about it here, that's one of the things that she instilled in me before I ever started school. Don't talk about this to other people. Keep this under your hat. They'll think you're crazy. They'll think you're nuts. They'll label you, all these kinds of things. So I think it is part of our society that we're inculcated into this concept of worrying about what other people think. And as a young child, I never came out of the closet. Even to this day, I've kept this really quiet and to myself. But when my grandmother died in the late 80s, I, because of my connection with her, and it might sound nuts, but I still stayed in communication with her over the years. And then when my daughter was born, that communication stopped. And when my daughter was born, she was the spitting image of my grandmother. The moment she was born, we had multiple names picked out for her, a list of 20 names long, months before she was born, trimmed it down to three names. My grandmother's name was never even on the list, ever. The moment she was born, I saw my grandmother's spirit in her and knew that that was going to be her name. She's now coming up on 12 years old, and I've had a lot of health issues. I went into health care, became a licensed health care professional. So for many years, I've been doing that. My grandmother instilled in me a really great respect for animals of all kinds, to help them when possible. And this is one of the things that my daughter has always had in her. I'm one of the few people I've never heard of anyone else that's ever had a hummingbird land on them. I have. Well,
yeah, that's true. I don't think that's ever happened to me.
My daughter has had the same kind of connection with animals, taking care of birds that are injured and all kinds of little quirky things that were the same kind of things that my grandmother did.
So are you convinced your daughter is your grandmother?
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt about it.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Do you treat your daughter differently? Is it strange?
No, because the love was there before.
Sure.
And so, it's just, you know, I can't really differentiate the love between this daughter and my other two daughters. You know, I've been blessed with three children. I was told I would never have children. So, that's another whole story, and I'd love to share with you at another time. But I want to try to stay focused on this and appreciate what Jim is doing here, bringing this from his perspective into a scientific analysis, really giving it the impact that it needs from that perspective specifically, to give it the credence that it's due. You know, all of these other things can come about in the understanding of people throughout the world, that we're all really connected and that we're a family of spirit beyond this life. And once we all understand that, then we can all come together and really make this world what it really needs to be.
Now, Jim, let me ask you, can someone like Bill, who has so incredibly strong feelings of his grandmother, can he actually draw that soul to, let's say, his daughter, before the daughter was born, obviously, but draw that soul to himself?
Well, I think that's certainly worth considering. I mean, again, with our cases, it's not just random where they end up, and a lot of them do talk about being in the same family, and there may well be that. It may well be the case that emotional connections act like a magnetic pull and draw souls or draw the consciousness into particular children.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there. Hello. She is gone, or he. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Yes. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, this is Mary Jane from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to, I'm so glad I got on. I'd like to tell that before I was born, I was at my workbench or table or something, and there was other people in the room too, but it was quiet and calm. And I was summoned to the authorities or someone that decides these things to choose my parents. And when I went there, I think there were three people, three men or something, and they showed me through, it was like a screen or a pool on the floor, but it ended up looking like through a telescope. One set of parents, and they were a young couple, and then they showed me a family. There was a whole bunch of children, and they said, which one do you want? And I said, the first young couple looked kind of scared, so I didn't want to go there.
So you had the option, though, huh?
Yes, I had the option of two. They gave me the choice of which two, and so I chose the larger family because they said, why? I said, because it looks like it'd be a lot of fun to be in a large family.
And were these memories that you've always had?
No, they didn't come to me until I was about 53.
Hmm.
But they've stuck steadily with me, you know, as if I was there since. And I'm 66 now. And then I went back to my duties or whatever I was doing. And a nice, peaceful, calm atmosphere. And then they came and got me later on. They said, it's time. And they said, you promised. So I went down and I was born. But when I came into the world, it was so noisy. And I had all these kids jumping around the table because I was born at home.
Did you go to the wrong family?
No, the midwife was washing me and bathing me on the kitchen table or something. All these kids were jumping up trying to look at me, you know, and I just don't remember which one. And there was one little short one, and then there was a tall, skinny one, and there was this real pretty one.
Well, how did you remember the event?
I have to tell you this. It was so noisy. I said, and this word I used for a baby, I couldn't take all the clamor, and I went back. And they said, but I went back to the beans.
You went back?
Yeah, so I don't know if I died or what. But they said, no, you promised you would go to that family, so I had to come back, you know.
How do you recall now that event before you were born with those people who sent you around? How do you recall that?
How do I recall that? It's just there in my mind.
All right. What's your take on that, Jim?
Well, it's certainly similar to some of the reports that we get from the children who not only talk about the previous lives but also talk about time between lives. And certainly some of them do talk about sort of looking down and seeing their future parents and deciding to go to be born to them.
Yes, and then another thing is when I was giving birth to my third child, I died and I was at the ceiling and I went all the way out. And this was before the astronauts went to the moon, and I saw the Earth like as if I was from the moon, you know, the blue and white marble in the sky. That was before we ever had images of it. And the same three tall beings met me, and they said, is there any reason you need to go back? And I said, yes, to take care of my baby and my husband and my other children and any future children. And zap, I was back.
Hmm.
Sounds like a pretty good memory with stuff like that. These children who seem to come back, do they carry on any special skills if the previous person had any? And again, let's say, you know, they were a great composer.
Mm-hmm.
Does the child become a composer?
Well, who knows? I mean, looking at child prodigies, as far as I know, none of them have ever reported previous lives that, you know, would have led to it. But there are children where they're not necessarily prodigies, but they seem to pick up on particular skills a lot more easily than other kids, and that those are ones that would connect back to what the previous person did or talents that the previous person had.
Let's go to our final caller east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yes, hello. This is Josie from Rhode Island.
Hey, Josie, go ahead.
You know, most of my life I've had this vision or memory of like being in a bassinet. It was all draped in black. And these women, mostly women, I've seen women come and they're looking over me, and they're all dressed in black with these big picturesque hats with veils, black veils over their face. And I'm in this big, big palace. It's all in gold, and there's no furniture, maybe a few chairs, and that's it. And this is a memory I've had most of my life, and I don't know what that is.
how much of this, Jim, is created memory? How much of it is actually happening?
Well, there's no way to know. I mean, again, a lot of people will report memories like this, but if there aren't specific details that can then be verified as accurate for one deceased person, there's no way to determine how much of it may be fantasy versus actual memory.
Do you think you, Jim Tucker, might have had a past life?
Oh, I have no idea. I certainly have no past life memories, and who knows?
What about our interests, though, Jim? You know, I've got certain hobbies. There's some things I like to do. Is it possible I may have picked up those traits from my past lives, which I, of course, don't remember?
Well, I think it is. It certainly is possible. I mean, again, you'll see people who have hobbies or interests that are completely different from anybody else in their family or anyone else around them. But they just really connect to that material and seem very interested in it.
Now, what do you think this is, this transfer, once again, as we are ready to say goodnight? Is it the soul going from one to the other, or is it memory? What do you think it is, assuming it is?
Yeah, well, assuming that, yeah, that there is some connection. I don't like the word soul only because it has a lot of connotations that, you know, may or may not be supported by this work. But there does seem to be, if these cases are what they appear to be, some vehicle or a consciousness that includes memories but also includes emotions and can include traumas that goes from the end of one life and then carries on into the next life.
It's a lion. Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.